Welcome, everyone. My name is Shelley Ziegler, and I'm the director of the Blind and Physically Handicapped Library Services here at the Mississippi Library Commission. And I want to thank you for coming here to our Pratt Smoot Act celebration. This is the 82nd year, I believe. So thank you all for coming out, and I hope you all found your way here through all the roads and the maze. So thank you so much. As you know, the Pratt Smoot Act is what brought talking books to those who are visually and eventually physically impaired. And so today we would like to celebrate that. And we have a wonderful keynote speaker, Ray Fouché. He's here from Louisville, Kentucky, which is my part of the country. So I'm super excited about that. And with that, I would like to bring up our Executive Director of the Library Commission, Ms. Sharman Smith.
Everyone. It's great to have you all here. As Shelley said, getting here is a bit of a challenge these days since they are reworking the roads. We never know from day to day what the direction is going to be to get to the building. So we decided ourselves to actually put up a bunch of big signs so that whatever day that we're trying to find our way, we can help our users and our customers get here. But we do thank you all for taking the time to be with us today to help us celebrate Pratt Smoot. As Shelley said, it's hard to think what service would be like or what would be available if it had not been for the Pratt Smoot Act. If it had not been for Pratt Smoot, there wouldn't be no blind and physically handicapped library services. And that is an amazing service that I know many of you take advantage of. And I hope that you spread the word about that service to other people as well. There are a lot of people who qualify for the service. Many people sometimes stop after the word blind and they don't think of the other ways or the other folks that could take advantage of the service, either from a physical issue or even a reading disability that has an organic nature. But we need to spread that word. We're not serving near as many people in this state as we would like to. I know Friends of Mississippi Libraries has worried over that, as we have for quite a long time, and has done a great job of getting the word out. It's just you have to catch people when they're ready to hear the word, I think, sometimes, and that's the point. But do, as you're talking to other people, share the fact that this service exists and how it can help people. I'd like to welcome, as I have already, but welcome our speaker today, Ray Fouché. Got it, Ray? Took me a minute. I always want to say Fouché, but it's Fouché. To Mississippi, and you all did a wonderful thing by taking him to eat catfish last night. How much more Mississippi can you be than they have catfish? And apparently he approved. Apparently it was very good catfish. So I hear that you all had a great time last night, and you're in for quite a treat today. I was reading Ray's biography today, the little bit I had on him, and it's amazing the variety of titles that he has read through the years. Not only the variety, but the number of titles that he has read through the years. So we are looking forward, Ray, to hearing what you have to say. And I want to thank three groups of folks who are especially responsible for today. That's Friends of Handicapped Readers, the Mississippi Federation for the Blind, as well as the Mississippi Council for the Blind. I also want to recognize the staff here at the Library Commission and Blind and Physically Handicapped Services for working to put this together today and doing the legwork on a good bit of it, because there's always more than anyone anticipates when you throw a party. And so we really are thankful for you organizations who have taken the lead and provided the resources necessary for us to have this celebration today. But you all did not come here to hear me talk, so I'm going to pass the microphone on to, I'm going to pass it back to Shelley, but hope you enjoy yourselves today.
I'm going to actually ask Billy Mayfield from our Friends of Handicapped Readers to come up here for a moment.
Thank you, Shelley. I'm going to be today sort of like the chicken was that said one time she thought she wanted to go out and lay an egg on the interstate highway. And she was talking to her friend, and her friend said, well, I've just got two pieces of advice for you. If you're going to do that, lay it on the line and do it in a hurry. That's kind of the way I'm going to be. And mainly what I want to do is to thank you. Thank each of you for coming out. Thank Ray for coming down. And thank the library staff for putting on this celebration today. And Ray would like for you to take back to other narrators and monitors our gratitude for the many hours of pleasure that you guys give us.
And now I'd like to ask Mike Smitherman from the Mississippi Council of the Blind to come up.
Shoot, I'll be much more brief than Billy was. We'd like to thank Ray for coming. I told him last night I had never read one of his books, but I went home and downloaded one. So I'm gonna check it out. Anyway, we'd like to thank all of you for coming. The Mississippi Council of the Blind is glad to be associated with the Library for the Blind and Physically Handicapped. And we appreciate all that the staff has done to pull this together. And we thank the Friends of Handicapped Readers as well as the Federation. But we thank all the narrators, too, and the monitors. I monitor for my wife to read, so I have an appreciation of what they do. But thank you again for coming.
So let me tell you about Ray Fouché. Ray works in broadcasting full-time when he's not narrating at American Printing House. I found out today just how he works out in his schedule to actually narrate at the American Printing House, and it's fascinating how he can work full-time and find in his schedule to go to APH, and it's amazing how he can do that, but he finds the time. He has been narrating for over 31 years, with a couple years that he had to take a break. Some of it was forced on him, the breaks. He has won the Alexander Scorby Award for narration in nonfiction. He has read over 700 books, 718 books for actually. One thing that he said last night at dinner that stood out to me, that you don't know that I was going to say this. I know, scared. Yeah, I know, you should be scared. He said that he hopes to retire from broadcasting, that he's looking forward to that, but he wants to narrate, and he hopes that he can narrate until he's 90. To me, that shows passion. That shows passion, and that definitely will that translate into work. This man is about passion, and I think when you hear him speak, you will definitely hear that. So please let's give another hand for Ray Fouché.
Well, first of all, thank you for your hospitality and having me. It's catfish. That was wonderful. I haven't spent a lot of time in Mississippi at all. I was down here about 20 years ago for a basketball tournament in I was in Gulfport, and Southern Mississippi was hosting it. And I think the two or three nights I spent in a hotel room down there is my sum total of life in Mississippi. But if the hospitality that I've experienced since I got here yesterday afternoon is any indication, I'll be back. It's very nice. I was glad to be invited here. I'm glad to be invited anywhere. that's what my wife always said. So usually glad to be invited anywhere. But especially because reading is such a one-way thing when you're just doing it, when you're recording, because it's just you in a little recording room, and there's somebody across the glass from you who's your monitor, and those are the heroes, too. They're the ones who make sure we do it all correctly. But you never really get a sense that you're reading to someone. It's more like, you know, just as if you're a radio DJ and you're talking on the into the microphone, but you don't have a telephone where somebody can call up and request a song or anything like that. So whenever I get a chance to come out and speak to groups like this, I love it, because you really can feel that you're doing something good. But I have to tell you, I don't do this because I have some noble thought that I want to do something good. This is really fun, narrating. Shelley was just saying, talking about my feeling that I want to retire from broadcasting. Anybody who's ever worked in broadcasting wants to retire from broadcasting. If you don't, you're crazy. It's a fun thing, but at some point, the pressures get to you and everything. But reading is, for me, like a release from that. It's an escape. She alluded to how I work my reading into my regular job, and literally it's just a question of two or three times a week taking a long lunch hour. That's it. And it's a great way to flush my mind of what I'm leaving behind in the morning and then going back to work. And luckily the studios are very close to where I work, so I can actually just go over there and spend a couple of hours in a studio and do it. I want to back up onto how I got into this in the first place. And I'm very, very lucky in that I was born in Louisville, Kentucky. And I say that because I love the place I was born. I've lived there my whole life. I would never dream of wanting to go anywhere else. I like to travel, but I always like to come home to Louisville. But what I never knew until I found out about the printing house was that it's very, well, I won't say very unique, because you're either unique or you aren't, but a very unusual thing to have. Every place doesn't have a facility like that. And I had been working in television at that point for a very short time. I was a young guy at that time, in my early 30s. And luckily, I encountered an older gentleman at the time. Does anybody know the name Jerry Fordyce? He was a narrator many years ago, and he worked at the printing house. I happened to have a chance conversation with him one time. And like I say, I was young, our daughter was on the way, and he was telling me, I hope they get out of the audio booth soon here, because I have to go to the printing house for the blind. And I said, what is the printing house for the blind? And he tells me what it is, and I said, you get to read books, and they get distributed, and people listen to those. He said, yes. I said, that sounds like a really nice thing to volunteer for. He said, oh, I'm not a volunteer. He said, they pay me. And I thought, oh, I need to know more about this now, for sure. But I went over and I got an audition, and I got the opportunity to do my first book, a Western. We were just looking through my list of books there. Sam Bass, first book I did in like late 1982. And it wasn't a great book. And I don't know, if I went back and listened to it now, I might cringe a bit, because it's been 30 years. I hope I've gotten a little bit better. But at the same time, it was an experience I got hooked on right away. I thought, this is really a neat thing, because I always loved to read. I grew up loving to read. I like to read any kind of books. I like to love to read comic books. I was a voracious reader. But reading them out loud was nice. And it never would have occurred to me, except that I had worked in broadcasting for a couple of years, and they used me as an announcer from time to time. And so I kind of had the confidence to try it out. And I had thought when I went over there that this would be something I might, you know, do a book or so, you know, every month or two, or, you know, from time to time. But it turned out they had a demand that fit me pretty well, and anytime I needed a book, they were ready to record it. So I started getting into a regular routine of doing this, and time went on. I did it until about 1987, so that was about 5 years or so. And I had to leave my job at the station at that. I didn't have to leave, but I left to take a position with another company, and that was a real, you're talking about a full-time job. That was one of those things where they own you. You're traveling a whole lot. And I had to give up my gig at the printing house. And I really thought then, well, that was a really nice thing I'd done. And I enjoyed it, but that's something I used to do. And for about 3 years, that's the way it was. I didn't do any more, and I completely got out of the procedure. But then I left that company because it became too much of a stress on me for a lot of reasons. But I was welcome back at the TV station. And when I went back to the station, where I've been ever since, I was working there for a few months, and then it dawned on me, I thought, you know, I could probably go back to recording again. And so I checked over there. There were a lot of different people at the printing house, but they said, sure, come on back and read some things. And I thought, well, I'll dabble in this for a while. Next thing I know, I'm here, and I've read 718 books in the last 31 years. So I don't know how that worked out, but how many of you guys have listened to anything I've ever done? Quite a few. Okay. If you've listened to many things, you've found that I do a whole lot of different kinds of books. And one of the things I find very ironic is Shelley again mentioned the Alexander Scorby Award that I got. And that was back in 1995. And I have done so many, if you've listened to much of my stuff, so many crime novels, so many hard-boiled detective things, courtroom dramas, that kind of thing, westerns, and yet I get this award for being excellent in nonfiction. And at that time, I to this day, I have no idea why. I mean, I've done nonfiction, but I thought, that's very strange to give me something for nonfiction. But since then, they've piled more nonfiction on me, so it's worked out very well. I started off saying this, but I really have to say it again. It's really neat one-on-one to meet the people who listen to the books, because that's where the real feedback comes. The first time I got, and this would have been the days before email or the internet, much of anything, you know, people would hear your book and they'd write a letter. They'd write a letter to the printing house because they didn't know how to get it to me, but they'd deliver it to me. And I remember the first day anybody brought me a letter that was from somebody who listened to a book, and it was just great. It was somebody who, you know, had connected, and they really appreciated the job. They went to the trouble to write this letter and send it, and I thought, that's really nice. And then, you know, another one showed up, and another one. And over the years, I've developed a lot of relationships with the people who listen to the books. I've met very few of them in person, but spoken to them on the phone. We have regular email connections with each other, and it's just worked out extremely well. And every once in a while, if I make one of these trips, I do finally get to put a face with the name, and it's really nice. It's the feeling that you are doing something really good, but at the same time, it's the perfect thing for me because I'm doing something good for myself. It's not just a way of making money. It's not just a way of contributing, whatever, you know, in whatever way you want to say. But it's almost like a hobby. That's why I do look forward to retiring from my job, because it will leave me all the time I need to do to read the books. It's not an effort at all. When I have a day off from the television station and I have a recording session scheduled, there is nothing in that day in my mind that connects to work at all. I'm not doing any work. I'm doing what other guys would do when they grab their golf clubs and go out and play golf. Or they grab the tennis racket and go play tennis. That's my hobby, I have found out. And it's a thing I always knew I liked to do for myself, but I never knew I liked to do it in this regard. A little bit of an ego too, because it's kind of neat to have people know who you are. But it's just, it's almost therapeutic. And I think it's, if I do manage to do it until I'm 90, I will have reached 90 because I got to do it. And that's really what the way it's going to boil down to it. I can talk about, you know, anything that comes to mind, but do you guys have any questions you'd like me to cover or anything like that?
You think you read slower than you talk?
Pace of reading is an interesting thing. I think I do read slower than I talk. But I will catch myself when I'm reading, and I'll find myself flying along. And I think that has a lot to do with my natural tendency, and I'll try to slow it down. I try to get in my head who a character is, not just what their voice sounds like, but what their personality would be like. So if a character would speak slowly, I try to do that too. But I think I do. Absolutely. Yes, here.
Do you have, both in terms of the broadcast perspective and your work at APH, do you have any Milton Metz stories
that you can
tell us?
Nothing will embarrass him or anything like that. But Milton and I are very... Anybody who else knows who Milton Metz is? Yeah, okay, a few of you. Milton is an icon in Louisville. When I was growing up, he was working for WHAS-TV, a major, major television station at that time. I have to say at that time because they're our competitor now. But he was their weatherman. Not their meteorologist, he was their weatherman. He wasn't a meteorologist, but he could read the weather just as well as anybody else could. That's how I first got to know him, but he had talk shows on WHAS. He worked on WHAS radio, which is a 50,000 watt clear channel station, so he was heard all over the eastern United States. And what was really neat was, having nothing to do with my reading or narration, but I'm also a comic book collector. I've got a reputation back in Louisville as a trivia expert. A friend of mine and I worked on some comics together before. So Milton had a regular 3-hour night radio show called Metz Here. It was on from 9 o'clock until midnight. And he would always have different guests on to either speak about very serious topics or, you know, frivolous topics, whatever. And he liked to mix in some fun stuff, too. So for about once every 3 months or so, my friend Don Rosa and I would go on there and we'd be guests on his show. But Milton Metz had a real habit. Even at that time, he was I think it, and Milton's still around, but he's about 90 years old now. But at the time, he was probably in his 60s or so. But he would come. His show began at 9 o'clock. And he'd say, now be sure to be there, boys, and plenty of time so we can get ready for the show. So we'd be down there at 8:30, waiting in the lobby of the radio station, no Milton. And it'd be 8:45, and no Milton. And 9:10, no Milton. And at about 3 minutes before 9 o'clock, this little red Maserati, this really cool little car, would come zipping up into this Milton Metz parking space. He'd jump out with his little neat hat he had on. he was quite the dapper guy. He'd go on, come on, gentlemen, let's go. And he'd sit down. He would literally sit right down at the table, and they'd be counting him down, 3, 2, 1. And he'd go, hello, everybody, Milton Metz here for Metz here. And he was ready to go, and he'd do an entire three-hour show every night that way. He never showed up early, never prepared for anything. And then he always had a neat little ritual that he'd do. The last commercial break, which would be about 20 minutes before midnight, usually during commercial breaks, he'd be talking to us and talking about what he'd be doing later. But in the last commercial break, he'd always say, excuse me, gentlemen. And he'd get on the phone, and he'd call his wife, and he'd say, Mimi, I'm coming home. I love you. And he'd hang up, and that would be it. And as soon as the show was over, by 1 minute after 12, he was back in his Maserati and heading home. So, that's my Milton Metz story. He's a great guy. He's a really good guy. Yes?
What's the process for choosing your books?
The choices are made, I can't say that they're made individually by Steve Mullins, but Steve Mullins is the head of our studio there, and they go through him. He's got to approve the choices, and I think they have a little committee that decides who should get what books, and they pretty much get assigned based on people's interests, also their past record. And of course, if you've done a book in a series, it's very, very likely, unless you did a bad job on it, I suppose, that you're probably going to get all the follow-ups in the series, too. And that was one of the things that kept me busy for a long time, because I had so many series going that were really prolific, like Ed McBain did the 87th Precinct books, and Robert B. Parker did the Spencer books, and it seemed like they would write a book every 4 weeks, and I would get those assigned to me. And they've both since passed away, so I have to find some new people to do the series for.
Did you know Terry Hayes Sales?
I knew her, but not well. Can't say I knew her. But now there's another person who went well into her 90s and who was doing that, who was recording until she passed away. She was a legend there. She was a young girl when she started recording, too. I mean, we're not talking about, I started in my early 30s. I was an old man next to what she did. She did that for the better part of 70 years. Very impressive. Anybody here ever meet her?
I did.
Did you?
I did.
Yeah, if you ever get a chance to come up to Louisville, you want to stop by the printing house, too. That's a pretty impressive operation. I got a nice tour around here, and I'm very impressed with this facility and what you guys do. You get to the printing house and see what goes on there, all the very, you know, not just the studio, but all the Braille printing and all the other products that they create. It's a very impressive thing, and it's in a historic building. That place has been there. That's the neat thing about it, too. There's so much history behind the printing house, and because it's an adjunct to the Kentucky School for the Blind. They're not the same place, and a lot of people in Louisville think that they are, especially because they're located right next to each other. But that just kind of happened as a natural evolution. But just the history behind that place, which goes back over a century, is pretty amazing.
Do you wear glasses?
To read, I do now. Although I needed glasses from the time I was probably in second grade, and then I had some LASIK surgery, because I had some cataracts. That was interesting. I got a real good taste for being visually impaired when I did that, but when it really happened was I'd had cataract surgery on both eyes, which is relatively minor as far as dealing with that. That's easy. That's like going in and just having LASIK surgery and you're fine the next day. But a little over a year ago, I went and I was getting an eye checkup, and the doctor said, we're going to the hospital now. And I said, what's up? And he said, you've got torn retina. And we got to fix this right away, because this, you know, you don't mess around with this because you can go blind in that eye. And this was particularly scary to me because the friend I alluded to, I did the radio show with, Don Rosa, who is a cartoonist and artist, really well known in cartooning circles. He suffered a detached retina about 3 years before and had a horrible experience with recovery. And as soon as I heard the words detached retina, I thought, oh man, I'm scared. This was bad. But within about 3 or 4 hours, I was on an operating table, and they were working on my eye. Luckily, I didn't have to go through the kind of recovery he did. He had it for like 3 months straight. He had to keep his head face down, no matter what he was doing, all day long, sleeping, the whole deal. He could not raise his head, and it was bad. But I was blind in an eye for like 3 months. It was a real sobering experience to think, okay, it's slowly but surely, over the course of 3 months, cleared up. And I got a real picture for what if it doesn't clear up? You know, what if it didn't clear up? What would it be like? And I had the irony of thinking, you know, maybe I'll be using this service here at some point, and that could happen again in the future. You never know. But it was an interesting time to do that. But since then, I mean, I do wear glasses now, but not for any kind of distance or anything. I have old man eyes, just like everybody does, pretty much at my age, and I need reading glasses. Funny thing, during that 3 months though that I recuperated, I continued to narrate. I was able to narrate one eye. At first, I tried going in and thinking, I'll just ignore this eye, and because I could still see if I tried. But that gave me a headache. I couldn't do that. So I got a patch, and everybody was calling me Long John Silver for a long time. So, for about 3 months there, whatever I read during that period of time, if there's anything different about it, it's because I was in mono and not in stereo, I guess.
Are most books are they hardcover or paperback? Or
it doesn't make any difference. It depends on what kind of version they got in there. I prefer paperbacks because I can mangle them to my heart's content when I'm flattening out the copy. That's one of the interesting things you don't think about for recording. If you listen to those recordings, if they're really well done, it's like listening to a nice CD. You hear silence when there's supposed to be silence. You don't hear papers rustling. You don't hear chairs squeaking. You don't hear anything like that. And you'd be amazed at how those chairs want to squeak and how those papers want to rustle. You really learn how to stay really quiet while you're reading. At first, that was one of the things that was hardest to get used to when I began reading at all, was being stopped all the time saying, I heard a noise. I'm thinking, a noise? What kind of noise? No, there was a noise in the background. And then you finally realize what they're talking about. It's a thing you wouldn't have even defined as a noise. You couldn't even hear it. But then you realize, oh, no, there's a lot of quality control here that they're working on. And so you don't learn just to read, but you learn to do it without histrionics. Because when I do commercials, let's say, because I do announcing for the station, I record a lot of commercials, I'll be in an audio booth, and it's not nearly as rigid in that regard, because they're going to have background music and all this stuff and everything. And if I'm supposed to be selling used cars or something like that, it just helps me to do this stuff. You know, I'm sort of like a barker at a carnival or something like that. But you can't do that when you're reading. You're just sitting there, and it's kind of counterintuitive, too, when you're doing something that's high action, you know, big action sequence, and you're sitting there trying to be very quiet while you're doing an exciting action scene. Yes, ma'am?
How much preparation do you take prior to reading?
This is my embarrassing question. This is what I admitted to last night. I hardly do any preparation. It's funny how it works out, and people hear that, especially other readers hear that, and I don't like them really to hear it, because they go, what? Because they apparently spend a lot of time preparing, and most of the time when you're hearing me read, I'm reading it the first time I've ever seen it. Which seems kind of strange. It seems almost impossible when I think about it. But when you get into a certain kind of book, and especially an author that you're already familiar with, and especially if you're doing a series, when it's an author doing a character that you're familiar with, if you're tuned into the book, you know where it's going. And I kind of like experiencing it the same way the reader does. You know, you've never read it before. You've never heard it before. So, you know, I want kind of, if there's supposed to be surprise in my voice, I want it to be genuine surprise. I want to be surprised when you are. If I suddenly hit an emotional point in the book, I would like to be emotional and react to it as it's happening. Whereas if I had really prepared before, then I'm kind of like being an actor thinking, okay, I must be emotional now. I say all that stuff to kind of justify the fact that I just don't read the books ahead of time. but I do on occasion. There are some, and I'm and looking through that list of the 718 books that I've done that they gave me, I realize there are a lot of those I don't even remember. But it's because they may be nonfiction books that were very, you know, heavy with terminology. There's one in there I know about epidemiology, where there's a fight against bacterial diseases all over the world. It had so many things in it. You couldn't do a book like that without preparing ahead. But if you're talking about straight fiction, I just pretty much read it as it comes. That's it. Yes?
Last night you said that there's a newcomer on the scene, I guess someone that you were mentoring. I didn't get her name.
Teresa Conkin. She's. I bring her up because she's kind of like what I was when I was learning from Jerry Fordyce what it was all about. She found out about the printing house from me. And she's a young woman, relatively young. All women are young to me now. That's one of the good things about getting older, you know?
All the women are young.
It's wonderful. But she found out about it, and she has a lovely voice, and she worked at the station for a while, and she's just started doing things there the past year. And I know when I suggested her to Steve, and he wasn't looking for any new narrators, but he said, well, okay, well, I'll take a listen. And he liked her enough to say, yeah, I think we want to check her out. So I just say that because I'm trying to kickstart her into things. She really likes it, too. She's into it, and I think she does a nice job. And you might want to seek out some of her stuff if you like to listen to female readers.
Do you know Phil Riggensdorf?
I do not.
Okay.
No, not at all. He's a narrator.
He may not be even...
I don't think...
He may be
he's not a Louisville. Okay. Do you have a question back here? Yes.
How does that work out, not doing a lot of prep in books of technical nature or foreign language?
Like technical nature or what?
Our books or foreign language.
Oh, well, like I say, if you get into some of those things, then you're going to have to do it. It has to happen. Although I have such good monitors, and I mentioned that earlier, the monitors are just as important as the narrators are. You guys are never going to hear the monitors. You're never going to develop a real, you know, feel for who they are. You don't hear their names, and they're not the people who are going to get invited to speak to a group like this. But I got to tell you, they are just as important to this whole procedure. It's like watching a movie and loving the stars of the movie, but not having any clue that there's a director. And it's almost the same kind of analogy I can make. Todd, he's my, 9 times out of 10, my monitor. Sometimes it shifts off, but he's my regular monitor. This guy is so good. He's so good on foreign languages. He is so good on doing a lot of the research that I don't do on any kind of complicated terminology that comes up. And he's also, he has the ear of, he's amazing. He's the one who's always stopped me saying, we got a noise there, we have to go back. And I'm thinking, I had not heard a thing. Sometimes we almost come to blows over. It's like, there is no noise. And he says, yes, there is, let's go back. They are such quality control, and they're not just quality control, but they make sure you get it right. I might read the name of the capital of Kazakhstan 18 times, and he will not accept it until I've done it right the 19th time. And that's why it comes out of it. Sounds like I know what I'm talking about. Chances are good it's because a monitor made sure I did know what I was talking about. Yes?
Do you find it easier to do the things you just described, going back and so forth now, with the digital production versus the old reel-to-reel?
The production doesn't make much difference to me. I'm sure it makes a great deal of difference on the consumer end. And I can see why, just the simplicity of it. But the production method didn't change much for me. Now, I know that the production quality went up a whole lot, but the way I do things doesn't change much at all. We used to always... The one strange thing that is a byproduct, though, of the way it goes, is that you used to always do 88-minute sides. And I would record a side, and then when you got to the end of the side, you'd say, end of side 3 to continue, turn cassette over, and that all of that. And then you'd open the next side, and you'd say, you know, whatever the title of the book was, The Green Mile by Stephen King, continuing on page 46 or whatever. Now all we do is every 90 minutes, because there are still files that they have to keep in. You can't have a file that's just forever long. So they keep digital files of the books and then marry them together in the digital form. That we do 90-minute segments of books. But when we begin the next segment, there is no opening announcement or anything because there's not going to be one. All we're going to do is begin reading again. And what happens to me is that a lot of times if I'm maybe 7 or 8 sides, what I still call a side, a segment into a book, if you ask me what the name of this book is or the name of the author, I wouldn't know. Somebody did that one time and I went, I don't know. I was telling my wife about this book I was reading that I really like. I was saying, this happened. Well, what's the name of that book? And I said, I have no clue. Well, who wrote it? I don't know. She said, how is this possible? And it's because I'm never looking at the cover anymore. I come in and I just open the book and I have a bookmark where I stopped the last time and I keep reading. And it's bad because I'm looking at some of the older books, and even there where I did say the title every day or every 2 days and say the author's name, I'm not remembering the books. These things are flying by, and these are books I like, and then you ask me who did it, and I don't have a clue. So that's been a difference on the way it works, that's for sure.
Does the monitor actually do the backing up, or does somebody else?
The monitor is not an engineer in the sense of fixing the equipment or tuning the equipment or anything like that. We do have an engineering crew where if they're the dreaded hum, you know, there will always be, you'll get into the studio and at some point you'll put on the headset, you go, one of those low-level electronic hums, and think, oh, we got to get this fixed. And so it's moved to a different studio while the engineers come in, but that's a different thing.
Do you use a boom mic or a podium mic?
A boom mic. Yeah, I'm sitting down the whole time and just using
that. Can you sit straight, or you have to lean forward?
I shift around a whole lot, and that that causes trouble because that makes noise when you shift around. So I have to back up sometimes. That's one of the biggest challenges of the whole thing. It's 2 hours of sitting in one spot and reading. And if you stop and think about it, there's not a whole lot of things you do during the course of a day where you sit in one spot and virtually don't change your position and just talk into a microphone. It's not a stress on my voice at all. I don't have a, people will say, I couldn't talk for 2 hours straight. And the truth is, yes, you can. I mean, well, some people can, I guess. I don't. But more, you could. But it's, when I get up from that, I feel like I've been playing football all day or something like that because my back's so stiff. And that's maybe that's the thing that'll put me out of business one of these days. I hope it's not my voice, though.
Like when the when a mistake is made, or you have to sit in the monitor, do you have signals, or does he say
no? They just cut right in. If he hears them, 9 times out of 10, I'm good enough to know I made a mistake. I will stop, you know, because you just stumble over words and you got to stop. But if he hears something that I didn't hear, he just cuts in. And I have headsets on, and I'm actually, when I'm reading, I'm hearing myself through the headsets. But he'll cut in and stop me and say, just you know, such and such a word was wrong. Go back, and then you just. I can control the, I still call it the tape, but it's not a tape, but I can control the recording and just run it back about 5 seconds and then cut in at the right time and start reading again. Okay. That's the way that works.
How long does it take you to do your average 90-minute file? How long does it take?
If it's not a tough book, I will do one of those in a session. I tend to, I have a high average. I'll say that. I'll boast that. I'm sure everybody here knows who Barry Burnson is.
Yeah.
You guys have heard Barry Burnson. I would say Barry Burnson and I probably have the most efficient ratio of time spent to recorded time, acceptable recorded time at the printing house. We both, in the old days when it was an 88-minute side, we would pretty regularly, if we came in for a two-hour session, we'd get at least a side on, which is pretty good. I did a session just last week where I got 110 minutes on.
Wow.
Which means we virtually didn't stop, because that's 10 minutes other than, you know, the recorded time that you spend, and that's, you know, you had to stop at some points to just go back and catch your breath. But that's what happens when you get, it happens when you get a good book. It doesn't just have to be simple, but it has to be really good. If it's good and you're really engrossed in it, then you can really get into it, and sometimes you're not even aware after a while that you're doing the reading. It just seems like it's, you're enjoying it as much as you would if you were just sitting there reading it. This gives me a chance to plug the book that I'm doing right now. A lot of people ask what my favorite book is, and there are a lot of answers to that because it depends on the kind of book I'd be interested in. But there's a very good chance that if somebody asks me, you know, a few years from now what the best book I've ever done is, I think it's the one I'm doing right now. And it's a book called Sutton. That's the name of the book. It is a novel, but it's based on Willie Sutton, the bank robber from the 30s and 40s. And it, while that, when they told me you want to do this book, I thought, I have no particular affinity for Willie Sutton or anything like that, but sure, I'll do it. I don't know anything about him. This is such a well-written book. It is really, really good. It's a life story. It's almost a romance. It's based in reality, so there's historical fiction there, which I really like, especially if it's recent American historical fiction. And I'm not done with it yet. And as we talked about before, I don't know how it ends. But I sure do like the way it begins. I'm about halfway through it, two-thirds of the way through it, and the best praise I can give it is that I brought that with me, and I am reading ahead. I am actually preparing for this book, and it's not because it needs to be prepared, because when I started, I was immediately tuned in with this book, and I was reading it really well, I think. But now, I want to get to the end before I get to the end on narrating it. So that probably will be available within about 3 or 4 months, and I will give that a hearty recommendation. That'll be a good one. Very good stuff. Somebody back here had a question before.
You've actually kind of touched on it a little bit. I had a question about your voice. Since you've been broadcasting for so long and reading for so long. And I know you said it wasn't stressful for your voice, but do you do anything particular? You know, there's so much, you may not have acid reflux, allergies. There's so much going on with the voice now.
Right.
So
I do
kind of. Your voice is so clear and.
Well, everybody who lives in the Ohio Valley has some kind of allergy.
Okay. Right.
So that, I mean, that's just a general strategy. You should just take that as gospel. But no, I haven't had to do too much stuff with that. You know, the thing that puts you out of business for a while though is if you get a cold, you know, you're done for at that point. You got to let it pass. Luckily, I haven't missed any time for sickness or having colds or anything for about 2 years now. Because there is nothing worse than that session when you're there and you're reading and then all of a sudden, you know, everybody, you always have that moment when you're getting a cold and there's that second where you go from I'm healthy to, oh no, I'm getting a cold, right? You know, you kind of feel it in the back of your throat. And when it does happen to me, it's in the middle of a session. I'll be reading and as suddenly the light will go on, I'm thinking, I'm not going to be reading again for another few weeks. this is going to happen. That's about it. It's not like I have to do any certain kind of treatment for the voice or take any kind of medications or anything. It's worked out well. Yes, all the way in the back.
First time I heard your narration, I did. Ooh!
Is that a good ooh?
Because you ride well in the car.
Oh, good. I've never heard it put that way.
I have a long commute, so I listen to books back and forth.
Okay.
You ride well. Some people don't.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yes, sir.
Well, good. I like that. Yeah. Yeah, some people meet me, and my wife will introduce me to people who
I won't tell him TV. He's a good bathtub partner either.
Yeah. That's another way of putting it. And my wife gets tired of hearing that because somebody will say, oh, I love your husband's voice. Isn't it a wonderful voice? And she goes, I've been listening to it for 40 years. You can't put one past her or anything, that's for sure. Anybody else? Well, let me just wrap up by saying I really love to get to do this kind of a thing. I really love to do that. And when I bring up my wife, I have to mention her too because she is, she really has encouraged me in this too. She was the one who, when it really was down to it at the beginning, I didn't say this earlier, but while I really was intrigued by the idea, she was the one who said, this sounds like a great idea. I mean, you know, you get a chance to read these books and everything. And she was just as fascinated with the whole concept as I was, knowing that it existed. She has been pushing it all along. She was the one who reminded me as soon as I was done with that job that kept me away for a while. She said, you're going to go back to the printing house? I'm like, yeah, yeah. So she was happy to do this. She let me come see
what,
you guys.
What's your wife's name?
Jane. Jane Carter. Isn't that a unique name? Mm-hmm. She doesn't like to hear that. I say, you could have been Jane Doe, you know, with a name like Jane Carter. That was fine. But also, like Ms. Smith was saying earlier, I had heard earlier from Shelley that it's frustrating, and I'm sure it is because I work in promotion at the TV station too, to think that you've, you know, really gotten the word out about a program, about anything that you do. Like we're always, you know, watch our shows, please. You know, we buy the sides of buses, we buy billboards, we buy radio advertising, we're promoting it on our own TV show. And it's still, you don't get through to everybody. People don't get the message. And I think an organization like this has that kind of a problem, too. You're doing great things. This is a tremendous service for the people of this state. And they're working as hard as they can to get the word out about this. And yet, no matter what you do, there's going to be people. So all you guys are ambassadors, really. And I'm sure everybody here knows somebody else, and they know somebody else who could be using this service and making use of it. And it's really up to everybody else to do it. And I would encourage you to, because I know I've gotten a chance to let people know on my side about things that never existed like this before. And there's hundreds of people in Mississippi who are taking advantage of this kind of program. That means there are thousands of them who could be taking advantage of it. And, you know, for celebrations like this, you get a little bit of publicity. And if you like what we're doing, just keep letting us know and keep letting other people know. And I'll be glad to come back to see you anytime. Thank you very much. Thank you.